The GA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show in association with Paddy Power, and it's Cheddar, and Damien is here with me as usual on a Thursday. Cheddar, I have to start with you because there's an awful lot of people asking me about something you said on the last podcast, and it's not about Offaly Hurling, which a lot of people were complimenting you about. It's about the granny sucking an egg saying that you said. Nobody really knows what it means.
Oh no, I thought that was an old saying actually, Willie, kind of tell somebody that, you know, knows full well how to do something, how to do it better.
Right.
I thought that was an old country saying, so...
Have you heard that one? Tell Damien. I forget the exact quote of it, Damien. Have you heard this one?
I suppose we would have often said during the course of conversation that if you're trying to tell somebody to do something that they know well how to do, it's nasty if you're telling your granny how to soak eggs and that. Anyway.
Have you heard that one, Damien?
No, I never heard that one. No.
It's a classic.
I heard the scenes, you know, Kiki Mare, Kiki Foal, or Humpy Cow, Humpy Calf, or I've heard things like that, but no, I've never heard that one.
Right, okay. Yeah, no, I was kind of stumped. I didn't know if I was stupid and I should know what it meant, but then it was a lot of people in my boat, so now we know what it means anyway.
I wouldn't mind Woody, Damien, because he's a bit of a townie, but, you know, for a country person like yourself, I'd expect to know all of those sort of country idioms.
Yeah, well, being from the country, Cheddar, I know a fair few things. I never heard that one. You are right. calling me the townie, and Colin didn't see much in his time. He's probably under a stone or something. Or
my father...
Hang around. What?
Excuse me, my father is a farmer, there's a culture in me, and I was meant to mention to you, Cheddar, Damien gave us a tutorial last year on donkeys and the pros and cons of having a donkey on your farm, so Damien is a proper farmer.
And Colin, just a question, did you spend much time now on the farm yourself?
Only when I was young, going out there at weekends, that's all.
Yeah, you're probably a waste of time being out. You probably wouldn't even stand in a gap.
Right, listen, lads, we have to move on here because we're under pressure for time today. Cheddar has limited time with us. I want to start off with the Joe McDonagh Cup, lads, quickly. And this is really heating up because this weekend, obviously, it's not going too well for Laois Cheddar. It's a disaster, actually, but we'll get to that in just one second. Westmead are true, as we know. Carlow play Westmead in the last game, and Carlow have to get something from that game, because if Antrim beat Kerry, Antrim will get into the final on the head-to-head against Carlow. So, like, there's all to play for. There's Westmead, Carlow, Antrim all fighting for the top spot. Then you have, unfortunately, Laois and Mead. If Laois lose that to Mead, Laois are relegated at Christie Ring on the head-to-head. They'll both only have one game, which is in an awful place for Laois to beat Cheddar. But, like, I mean, every team has something to play for. Am I right or say no? Just one team. Kerry is the only team that has nothing to play for in the middle of all that.
You know, I still think they can make it, but they need a lot of things to go their way. Yeah, it is very competitive. A lot of the teams are probably on a similar level as such. I've been at a number of the games, and they've been quite good games. I suppose the difference in those games and the games that you're going to see at the elite level is the speed of the hurling and the quickness of the hurling and that.
And is it first touch as well, Cheddar? No,
yeah, there would be. Yeah. No, there would be. Look, in every facet, there is a gap between them. And you know, it's when you go up against the top teams, particularly in Championship hurling, that you notice that. But the thing that really hammers you is the speed that they're hurling. And it's not. I'm not just talking about athletic speed. It's hurling speed I'm talking about here. Speed of thinking, speed of thought, all of those things. And they hurt you greatly. And you're you know, at the start of the game, you're just behind too much to be able to catch up. And the real problem is, and I'm going back to an old chestnut now that I've explained a lot of times previously. You're hurling at a lower pace. It may be competitive in your area, in the division that you're in. It's competitive between you because the teams are at a one level. But when you step up to the top level, then the gap is so big, it's massive, and you're really caught in the headlights when that happens. But I think it's a competitive division, and there's probably going to be a really, really good final. I think if Westmeath and Carlow end up in the final, it'll be a good final. Both of them are playing well. Carlow are playing to a particular way at the minute, and they've good momentum behind them. So Westmeath won all of their matches, but incidentally, in the league playoff, to step up to Division 1B, Carlow beat Westmeath in that, and seem to have a bit of an Indian sign over them over the last couple of years, particularly if those games are played in Dr. Pullen Cullen Park, Carlow. So it'll be interesting to see what Westmeath, I suppose, do on Sunday as well. You know, do they really go for the game, and do they leave something in reserve for the final? They're already in it now, and it's a real carrot there to play in Croke Park before Leinster final day and that.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one with Westmeath and Carlow, Damien. So they played in the league in the first round, and Westmeath beat Carlow. Then they played in the league final, and Carlow hammered Westmeath. Now they're playing in the last game of the Joe McDonagh Cup. Carlow have to win. Westmeath are through, and the chances are that they'll probably play in the final as well if Carlow get anything out of the game. So, like, I mean, it's almost like these two teams are sick of each other, but it is that whole thing. Do Westmeath, now that they're through, do they show their hand, or do they put out a dummy team and lose their momentum? It's a really difficult one, and these are the kind of ones, kind of hindsight analysis tells you what the right answer is, but it's very difficult to know before it happens.
Yeah, well, I don't think they'll put out a weaker team than as Westmeath. I'd say myself they will still try to go with a win, try gain confidence, try to gain momentum. But plus also, if Carlow was a bogey team of theirs and they were to let Carlow win, right, and or not win or even put out a weaker team and Carlow won the next thing to face them in the final, it could all backfire on them, you know.
Yeah.
And you're saying Carlow and Westmeath, they've been playing each other continuously. It nearly reminds you of, you remember Waterford were playing Cork for the great years, and we all did matches, you know, where no one was getting sick of them two teams playing each other because there were nearly 60 scores in every game where there was a complete free flow and stuff. But also, Colin, it was brilliant, I suppose, for someone like me and us, that on the Sunday game, right, and obviously not if I watched the Sunday game, right, but Gerard O'Connor and Brendan Cummins explained the whole, I suppose, Joe McDonagh Championship. And I personally didn't realise, and I'm going to put my hand up and say, I didn't realise that the winners of the Joe McDonagh goes, we said, number one, the final is played just before the Leinster final, right, which is brilliant.
That's great, yeah.
The players get to play in Croke Park. Now that's a success. That's an achievement in itself. You know that these players, whether it be Carlow or Westmeath, or we'll say if Meath gets something or whatever else, right, that match is going to be in Croke Park. That's the first thing. That's the first major success these players will be able to say down the line that they played in Croke Park. But the winners get put back into the qualifier system and get put back into the Championship, which is brilliant too. I didn't realise that. You know, so there's a massive incentive. So obviously not just the incentive of winning it and getting put back up into the Leinster Championship, right? But also to get put back up into the actual Championship itself, into the qualifier rounds. And if, for example, the likes of Westmeath did win it and they got back into the qualifier, and maybe they could get someone, you know, of a lesser standard, and they're on momentum, anything can happen, you know. So I actually think it's actually a brilliant little championship, and it seems to be very, very enjoyable. But I'm delighted to hear that the final will be played before the Leinster final, which is in Croke Park, and the winners get put back into the championship, which is a real incentive. So well done to whoever came up with that format. I think it's a brilliant little system.
I might come in there. Look, there are some advantages, Damien, but there are massive disadvantages to this. I think the advantages you've explained are good. I'd probably call them bonuses. But the wider context of this will hurt you much more seriously. Within those counties, the culture that you're performing at and the culture that you're preparing at, the quality of that drops massively, because really you're preparing for a championship, of a less standard, and Woolley has explained that a minute ago, and that leads to an awful lot of apathy within a county. And I suppose, you know, there's a number of things that fall into that. For example, your county board have a less higher target now to reach in terms of of what they need to deliver in hurling in the county and all of that. I would be in favour of it if I thought there was a really comprehensive hurling development programme targeted specifically for each of those counties, that over a period of time, let that be 5 years or 10 years or whatever, will drag that county up so as it's strong enough to be able to compete. And I'm always saying competing here, not necessarily winning All Ireland or Leinster Championships or anything like that, but they're strong enough to be able to compete against the league counties. I've never seen that, and failing seeing that, I always just regard this as pushing these counties down to a lower championship, because at the end of the day, we've got to call it what it is. That's what it is. And really what it does is it engenders poor culture. Some of the players won't bother playing, because some of the better players won't bother playing with your county, because they don't really see it as the Leinster Championship or the All-Ireland Championship, and so on and so on. And it leads to just frustration and apathy in counties. So
Cheddar, just on that now, and I do take that point to a certain extent, but would there be apathy in a county that is in a competition that has got five games against teams at their own level, and the winner's playing Croke Park in a big game? Like, I think that's, like, I would love that. Whereas you never get that chance if you're in the Leinster Championship. You probably play a Galway in a first round and lose and you're out. So you get that. Then, if you win that, you play in an All-Ireland quarter final, which is another big game. Like, I mean, that's, I personally, in my, like, I haven't been involved in weaker hurling counties, but at the same time, from a playing point of view, I think that's much more, attractive championship for me than what would be going into a Leinster Championship, not winning a game, and just kind of getting hammered.
It is good for some counties, and I suppose I'm just thinking of the likes of Leash and Offaly, who have a strong record in hurling. And if you look at Offaly, for example, I've spoken about this. They're going to go down to Joe McDonagh. I can tell you that the culture of preparation and the culture and the expectations of the county team will change dramatically in Offaly over the next couple of years, unless there's leadership within the county to take that and say, this is going to be a stepping stone up. But a stepping stone has got to have foundations to it. And there's got to be leadership in a county like Offaly now to say, look, we are where we are. We've got to find out the reasons why we are where we are, and we've got to remedy those. Here's how we're going to remedy them. Here's the development plan for Offaly for the next 10 years. Here's how we're going to improve the number of quality players we have available to play at the top level for the next 20, 30 years. In the meantime, we also need an immediate remedial work to do with our county team, because at the end of the day, our county team is our flagship team. How can you tell young players in Burr that have seen All-Ireland club championships come to their club and have seen a lot of players within their town that have won All-Irelands, that look, it's okay lads, we have a lower standard to play for here in the Joe McDonagh Cup. So I'm just going back to the point I made earlier, certainly for some counties it will not help. And bear in mind, if you're playing at a lower level for five games or six games, yes, there is a bonus of going into Croke Park, but I can tell you, your step up to All-Ireland Championship, and I felt this myself when I was manager of Laois, the step up to the league counties is massive, and you will take a bad beating. So what's going to happen? Is the Joe McDonagh teams just going to step up and step back every second year? Because that is what's going to happen now. Unless somebody decides to get in behind the whole project and say, hold on a minute, we're going to increase the number of counties that can actually compete at elite level. I'm not saying win, that can compete at elite level. Here's how we're going to do it. We're going to have a comprehensive plan, fully funded, specifically for each county, overseen by a project manager, not by county boards or any provincial councils, because they've had the chances in the past and they haven't made it work. Unless I see something radical like that, well then I think we're just looking at the Joe McDonagh Cup as a step down for counties to play among themselves.
That's how
I see it.
No, and I take your point definitely, and I think that a lot of the talk about Offaly have been on the slide for so long in hurling and football, and that's not the GAA's fault. I think the questions need to be asked of the Offaly County Board, and there's some awful stories you hear out of them and their refusal to accept where they are and actually try to improve it. And that's been well documented. There's been internal reviews that haven't even seen the light of day, even though they're completed at county board level, which is so in a way Offaly have only got themselves to blame, because they can't get their house in order at county board level and they don't seem to have the appetite. So no matter what the GAA does, and the structure of the way the GAA is run, if the GAA are given funds or given whatever help they can, if it's not being used correctly and, you know, within a county board, I take your point that maybe some separate project manager or something should be able to look into it or something, because, like, I mean, nobody wants to see that.
I know, it's such a comprehensive thing here we're talking about that, you know, you've got to ask first, have the people the skill sets to be able to implement this? And we're talking about serious project management type skills here. And look, you can look at the past histories of county boards, and I'm only using Offaly as an example here, and I'm loath to do that because there are our neighbours and, you know, great competitors over the years. But there's a lot of media articles written about Offaly, and if the media articles are correct, having their own development plan, and it has to be their own development plan driven by their own people, and I know a lot of really good coaches in Offaly that are capable of doing that, but it has got to be something like that, and you know, it hasn't happened in the past, and you've got to ask, you know, why are we where we are? If you look, Offaly are a really good point, or a really good case study actually, because the reason they won All-Irelands in 81 and 85 was to do with a Leinster under 21 winning championship team in 77. They actually beat Leash in the final, I'm pretty sure, of the right year. The reason they won All-Irelands in the 90s is because they won 3 All-Ireland minors. It doesn't happen by chance in those counties. It might happen by chance in the league counties like Kilkenny and Tipperary. It can only happen in these type of counties by a really, really good on the ground plan that can develop players of sufficient quality to be able to play at this level.
Yeah, Damien, there was another one I wanted to talk to you about here quickly, was Christy O'Connor had a piece on the RTÉ website about sideline cuts and about Joe Canning in particular. And he's saying he first showcased the ability as a 15-year-old in the 2004 All-Ireland Minor Final replay against Kilkenny when he nailed 2 sidelines. I'm sure you have a memory of that. Then in 2008, he nailed 3 sideline cuts in the under-21 All-Ireland semi-final against Kilkenny and 4 in an epic LIT versus Waterford IT Fitzgibbon Cup. At senior level, no other player in history has scored as many championship points from a sideline as Canning, who has now got 17 points from sidelines in inter-county championship hurling. It's incredible stuff.
But Joe is brilliant at that sort of stuff. Technical ability and skill work, he'd be top notch. And often people say, and I sometimes agree with this, that the sideline should be worth 2 points,
yeah,
as opposed to 1, because it is so difficult, and there isn't too many in the modern game that are doing it. You know, like Pádraig Mahony had an attempt at the last day, so he did a hit post. Now I know Walter got a point, and then you have Ronan Maher that's also doing it. So, you know, so there is very, very few players that are able, you know, consistently, I suppose, at a regular basis, able to do it, you know. And we're very, very lucky and very fortunate in Galway, and particularly in Portumna, that we have someone like Joe that's able to do it for us. But at a young age, Joe, you could see Joe used to be practicing even when we were down training with the seniors, when Joe would be playing under 2014, you see him practicing. And it's like anything, Colin. This stuff, you don't just pick this stuff up off the ground. It's all down to practice. Like a free taker, you don't just go out to a freeze and just start taking frees. It's all down to practice. It's hours and hours of practice. So you're perfecting your technique. You're perfecting the placement of the ball. Some people like to place the ball and then knock the grass just at the bottom of the ball, so where you can get absolutely underneath. Another great sideline taker was Gerard Farrar, who used to get unbelievable distance as well. And also Austin Gleeson got one as well the other day that he's able to put an unbelievable distance. But there's different techniques and different styles to doing line balls. Some people like to have the rim of the ball at the very bottom, so that when your boss of the hurley gets underneath it and you get your body as low as you can into a chin or flexion position, that the ball will travel up into the air. And then other people will tell you to have the rim of the ball against, so that you're hitting into the side of the rim. So there's just different styles, there's different techniques and all that. And it all comes down to practice, and it all comes down to hours and hours of just getting your technique perfect. But like, to be fair, Joe, the last day against Wexford, he put over 2 great scores. So he did in the Leinster game. So he did, and you know, there isn't many able to do it. And once again, it's not by fluke. It's hours and hours and hours of technique and perfecting what you're good at. And like as I said, we're very, very lucky to have him in Portumna, and very lucky that he's playing for Galway.
Yeah, he says that Joe Canning was asked himself before about how he does it, and he says, I like to make sure I get a long stretch into the ball, like an exaggerated genuflection. So, like, I mean, that's obviously the technique, is to get down very, very low to be able to get under it. But like, I mean, I'm just wondering, when you're a young lad under sevens, under eights, under nines, like, do you practice that, or how do you figure out that you're good at it?
Oh, you do. What you do is, Colin, when you're training the juveniles in your club, right, you're going through all the skills with the kids, so yeah, right? So next thing you come to free-taking, and you take free-taking, they say that you line your boss, you hurl across your chest, and you aim for the back spot in the middle of the goals, and that the ball, if you get the rise perfect and you strike it, the ball should travel in that straight line, well, no matter what angle you are. So you're always aligning your body in a straight line to the black mark. When it comes to the sideline balls, yes, once again, it's all about technique and it's about what suits you. Now, obviously, the likes of Gerard Farrar's good side was his left-hand side, Joe Cannon's side, best side was his right-hand side, right? So, obviously enough, they have two completely different techniques, no more than, once again, TJ Reid and the likes of Joe Cannon as well. But as you said there, Joe likes to get an exaggerated length into the ball. Joe didn't just pick that up. That all came from practicing. Some people come into it shorter, some people come into it longer, some people get down lower into the ball, whatever. And as you said, he does an exaggerated length into the ball, and he gets down as low as he can. He will slice the ball at power, and basically the ball will travel. But the big thing to add here is anyone can sideline a ball, Colin, and put it a distance of 40, 50, 60 yards, right? But it's to do it with accuracy.
Right.
That's the whole thing. And, some people struggle to put a ball over the bar from the sideline standing with the ball in their hands. You put the ball on the ground. So, like, it depends if there's wind, and the wind is going from left to right. You have to, you know, put the wind into account. So it's a phenomenal skill. But that's the only word to say. It's a phenomenal skill, and not everyone does. You know, and we, as I said there a second ago, we're lucky enough that we have Joe at the club, and with Galway, that he's able to do it. And there's a couple of other players around the county or around the country that are able to do it. But there isn't too many. But it's all about your own personal technique, and it all comes down to.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, would you have taken him for the club then? Like, I mean, obviously you don't take them when Joe Canning is around. But like,
I often say, Colin, if there was a sideline to be taken or a free to be taken with the club, if I ran over, and I often give this example, if Joe Cannon was injured and Andy Smith was injured, and we just say there was maybe one player who's all our club forwards were injured, and it came to getting a free taken, and I ran over to take the free, they'd probably take someone that was retired out of the stand and basically get him to take it before they let me take it. So I never really took frees, and I never really took sideline balls. I hadn't the patience. Straight up, I hadn't patience to learn the techniques and spend hours and find. And that's truth. You have to put time and effort into that sort of stuff. And as I said to you, no, I never done it. The only line ball I ever took was a real quick one. A quick line ball, 1-2, and you take an example, and I give you an example. The last day against Kilkenny, David Burke did it with Joe Cannon. He gave a quick line ball, and basically Galway got a score.
Yeah.
So who also do a lot of quick line balls, even though it hasn't worked out this summer. Tipperary like to do a lot of quick line balls where it's shortened the grip and into someone's hand about 10, 15 yards away. Bubbles O'Dwyer often tries it, or Noel or John McGrath, but it hasn't worked out much for them this summer.
Yeah, no, exactly. That makes sense. That's what I was asking you. Like, it wouldn't be a situation, even when Joe's on the field, that if you're over and you see a short one on, Joe's not going to light on you for not.
Well, we worked one year. I remember it well. We played Gort in a county final, so we did, and the ball went out for a line ball, and basically I ran over and I got the ball and I put it down, and basically I just remember it well. The Gort players, I kind of turned off because they were waiting for Joe to run over to take the line ball, and next thing, no one was on him, and I gave him the quick one straight into his hand, and basically turned over the bar.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, sometimes we say opposition backs might turn off for that second, and if they do, then you can take the opportunity. But yeah, we're often sometimes 1-2, but it doesn't happen that often, but sometimes we do.
Okay, great stuff. Up next, we will take a look ahead to the Limerick Waterford match.
We have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep and we have a few donkeys as well, so we had a couple of filly donkeys, so I brought them down, and so we did, we actually sold them to, I think I had four donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford. So we did. So there's the piebald donkey, so there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
Yeah, you see them on the beaches, and so yeah, you can actually one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them, because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your, would say, your bonuses, your grants. A donkey and eat, and a donkey eat a pallet.
Yes, so Limerick Waterford is in the Gaelic grounds at 2 p.m. on Sunday, and like a win here for Limerick, Damien, and they're through, like, which is incredible. A win for Waterford, and they're right back into the mix. Like, I mean, Waterford changed their system around the last time, so, like, you know, this is going to be a different type of game than maybe that we've been used to from Waterford.
Oh, absolutely. And the first thing I have to do, Colm, is I have to apologise to Waterford. So I do. The first thing I have to say is I didn't realise that Austin Gleeson would have been back, and Pádraig Manny would have been back as well the last day, right? Because I had them completely written off.
Yeah.
I told them that that was a very handy game for Tipperary meeting Waterford. So the first thing I had to do is I had to apologise to the Waterford people and the Waterford fans, because, as I said to you, I wrote them off and they completely answered my critics. So I did. They're absolutely brilliant, the last day. I thought they just hurled with freedom. It's amazing by when you give a young lad or young players or new starters a chance. And when they're hungry, it's unbelievable. And an awful lot of the Waterford players the last day against Tipperary absolutely stood up to the mark. Like, you had Austin Gleeson, who went into the sweeper role, so he had to took over for Tadhg De Borca, and then you had Brick Walsh, who went back in the half back line. So you had also Gleeson, they played a complete new role at full back. So you know what? So
yeah,
they had lads that were injured, and played like the Noel Connors, who was injured and ended up having to go off injured, and you could tell that it was his back that was Adam, but he played that game. So, like, I have to say, and I have to commend the whole Watt and their panel. They never once felt sorry for themselves. They never once made an excuse. They went out there and they got stuck into it, and they nearly won. And let's be honest, it was an injustice that they didn't win. It wasn't a goal, right? That's long and short. And the argument is out there that they let a whatever 10-11 point lead slip, you know, and they shouldn't have been in that position, but it wasn't a goal. And I feel sorry for Waterford in that sense, because they absolutely put in a towering performance. So that, but playing Limerick, yeah, you're right. If Limerick win, they're in the Munster final. If Waterford win, they're one game away from maybe being in a Munster final, or definitely qualifying in the top three. So this is going to be a really, really good game. Waterford basically went back to six forwards, you know, and if they didn't go back to six forwards, they realistically went back to five and us, and they scrapped their system. And as I said, I thought Waterford were really, really good the last day. They gave it absolutely everything. They hurled Tipperary off the park. Tipperary had no answer to them, particularly in the first 45 minutes, and maybe they're tired, but Pádraig Mahoney was absolutely outstanding. It has to be said, and it's not the first time I've said this that on the show. I think he's absolutely brilliant player. But I think it's going to be a great game. I really do. Will Limerick kick on and get into a Munster final, which would be an absolutely brilliant achievement? Or will Waterford doubt everyone again and put in another performance that could put them in a position to get into a Munster final, or at least get into the top three? So it's going to be a great game. It definitely will.
Yeah, I didn't see actually this game live, but from reading reports and seeing the highlights, like Damien says there, they went a lot more orthodox with at least five forwards, and Austin Gleeson was dropping back, but Austin Gleeson played centre half back, and we see a lot of centre half backs doing that. From what I was reading, there was no full time sweeper from lads that were at the game, so that is a big kind of change of system, Cheddar, and maybe there's that freedom of being written off. Like, will that freedom be there against Limerick? There might actually be a bit of pressure then to kind of follow up on that. So that, I don't know if that'll be a factor.
I think there's a couple of aspects to it, Willie. If you don't have your key players in a particular system, well then, you know, you may weigh up the options and the risks of actually changing the system. It's unlikely you will want to change the system, particularly when players are well rehearsed in it. And really, what the difficulty with changing a rehearsed system is that you are changing all the intelligence between players that's built up over a period of time and how you play. And really what I'm talking about here is the creation of space and you know, players understanding what one another do to create space for each other, so they're not all trying to clear space in the forward line and so on. When you change that, you change an awful lot of things that underpin your performance. But I think when you take some key players out of a system, as what happened Watford, unfortunately, through injuries and that, then you weigh up and you say, look, I've got to play to the best of the ability of the players I have left. How shall I set myself up? So I think that's, you know, I would imagine that that's how Derek would have approached it. I think that would have brought a surprise to the game, because clearly, you know, Tipperary mightn't have been ready for that, or other teams wouldn't have been ready for that. They would have expected and been set up to play in a certain way, and suddenly this is put in front of you, and it takes you a little while to react to that. And it may explain a little bit Tip's poor start in this game, although they've had a number of poor starts already. So I think the downside to that is, I suppose, that the surprise is gone a little bit from Waterford, that people, you know, will be prepared in advance of, you know, of what to expect here. They're still obviously going to be missing some key players here. It's an away game. You know, Limerick have a momentum in the Gaelic grounds built up.
Yeah. Well, that's Waterford's home ground now too, right?
it is.
Well, it will have helped them playing there and labelling it as their home ground, right?
Yeah, no, it is. But look, they've only played one game there. That's very, very different from you training there. When you train there, all your forwards have all their reference points marked out. They don't need to look at the goals. They just know where they are. The goalkeeper will have his reference points marked out around the square. It's just so familiar to them. It may very well be flagpoles or things like that, or the you know, all those things, you just take them automatically because you're practicing so much in it. Whereas when you go into a field, you might be knowing in two or three times. Look, they could bloody well change, and the manager might change them prior to the game. And you know, it's not as easy as that to say that. It's good to play it in the pitch before, of course it is, but it's not as beneficial to it as having your own as your own stadium.
Yeah, Tom Devine impressed you, Damien, the last time, did he? Like, I mean, he's a bull of a man altogether, and Stephen Bennett's a big man, and I think Maurice Shanahan's going to be back, because he had a groin injury, but he played the whole game against Clare and then just wasn't available the week after. So imagine it gave it a little bit of a pull. Usually if you finish out the game, a 2 week break should be enough with that. So, like, I mean, Lar Corbett pointed out a weakness he thought in the Limerick fullback line in the air. English and Finn are small enough in stature, and just wondering if that's something maybe that Waterford could exploit.
Yeah, well, they could. And just, you know, Tom Devine hit it off there last year, you know, travelling, as we all know. And, you know, McGrath could have, you know, as many managers do, you know, go on a hook and say, he'll never play for me again, you know, because after leaving us, you know. But what he did was, he came out and he wished him the very best luck in his travels and told him the door would always be open for him, which was a sign of the man as well, right? That's the first thing, right? But Devine, would you believe this? Tom Devine is the one full forward that has caused the likes of Doughty Burke problems, right? And he scored a goal against Galway last year in the league, and it was very, very similar to the way he took on Kennedy at the very start of the match against Tipperary, so, where he just went at the heart of him, so he did, and he went straight down the middle. Now, he hit the ball over the bar. If he actually kept a little bit lower, I reckon he could have got a goal, right? But I thought Tom Devine was excellent the last day. He was a target man. He was a big man. He scored goals. He scored points. He laid off balls for scores. So he was a real presence. So he was up there. He was a real target man. And as you said, the Limerick full back line wouldn't be as big as, you know, a lot of the full back line. So, yeah, Tom Devine will be full forward. And you know, the Waterford manager will say to him, you know, hit the ball route one, lads, into Devine. Devine's a big man there. He's a big presence. He'll win it. If he doesn't win it, there's going to be a break off and live off the breaks like this. But, you know, Tom Devine at the start, I personally think for Waterford last, he deserves a lot of credit. You know, the first time we seen him was in Ireland's Fittest Family. So it was, you know, with his mum and his brothers, you know, and he's an athlete. We did. He was, yeah, he was on the Ireland's Fittest Family. So he was, and we watch that every year, so we do. But but he's an athlete. That's basically what I'm trying to say. He's an athlete, and he's a big man, but he's a big man of all muscle and power. There's no body fat, and he deserves a lot of praise now, and I mean that, because he's not a regular starter with Waterford. Even last year, before he headed off in his travels, he wasn't a regular starter. So he wasn't, and he stood up to the mantle side last Sunday in particular, and he was an absolute thorn in their defence for Tipperary's last day. And you know, just to give him his due, I thought it was an outstanding game, and he was absolutely brilliant and deserves his plaudits, right? But also, he will be a big target man for Waterford next day against Limerick, and can also cause huge problems to Limerick in the full back line.
Isn't a gas cheddar with the target man for Waterford? We're not used to seeing it. We'd used to see maybe Maurice Shanahan in there on his own and he could catch a ball, but he's been double marked and he doesn't really have the support. And I'm not a critic of Waterford's style of play at all. I think it works well for them, but I can't wait to watch this game. I'm not actually going to be able to watch it, would you believe, live, because I'll be in Croke Park at Laois Carla. But I want to see this game back, because just to see Tom Devine actually winning a ball and actually having support around him, it's not something we're necessarily used to, that more traditional game from this Waterford players. But like, they did play a traditional brand of hurling, these lads, at under 21 level, so it's not alien to them.
I know, look, they're quality players can play in any system. There does have to be a system. There has to be some organisation in their hurling. But quality players can play within any system. Look, it's an interesting discussion. And incidentally, I think Mike Casey will be hurling full back for Limerick next Sunday from the Pearshaig. And you know, Mike Casey goes for everything. He's a very physical player, and that'll be a very interesting confrontation. Whereas I think Seamus Hickey plays the percentages an awful lot more as a full back. And you know, I think, you know, the likes of Sean Finn and Richie English, they may not be giants, but they certainly have hearts of giants.
Oh, they're tigerish,
and they will not give much space. So I think, you know, Tom Devine will not have it as easy the next day. You know, Seamus Kennedy is a new full back for Tipperary as such, and sometimes you've got to find your feet and get your understanding with your corner backs and all of that, and that takes time. You know, we've seen lots of full backs over the years that took a little while to settle into the position and then became noted full backs after that, but in the earlier part of their careers, just their timing of getting out for the ball, their understanding with their backs and all of that wasn't what it was later in their careers. But Mike Casey is an established full back, has played in All-Ireland club championships and that. I know they're a very, very different level, but he's a physical, no-nonsense player either, so that could be a very interesting confrontation between them. Just back to your point about Waterford, because look, the same point can be made about for Dublin. I think the scores against Dublin playing with a defensive screen, they don't play a sweeper as we know it, is a goal and 59 points. Whereas you look at Offaly, their concession of scores was 14 goals and 55 points. So it makes sense to screen your defence by whatever means you do it. It could be defensive wing forwards, it could be defensive midfielders, but it all involves, or it could be a sweeper, or it could be an extra defender that floats around picking up ball. Whatever it is, it makes sense to screen your defence in hurling, particularly in today's game. A number of years ago it mightn't be so important, but the skill sets of players now is phenomenal, and the scoring range is from half back line up to the end line, so it makes sense not to concede space in those areas to cleverly prepared teams.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like, I mean, this is the way it is now. I think the day of bringing a forward back as a sweeper might be gone, almost like we see that in football, because half forwards work so hard now, Damien, that your half back line just doesn't have to follow them, and you can use one of them maybe as the sweeper instead of bringing a forward back and messing up, you know what I mean, your shape. That Gaelic football has kind of evolved to that now, where we don't see as many forwards coming back to do it. We see a centre-half back dropping back to do it because he doesn't have to worry about his man because he's doing an awful lot of work. You know, maybe hurling's following that pattern.
Yeah. Well, as I said, the middle eight is the hardest positions to play, and your two half-forwards are expected to fall back continuously. And I think I explained this maybe in two or three shows, but all these modern managers are saying your number 10 and 12 shouldn't see out the game. And just a prime example of that, the role that we're speaking of, is Daniel Carney for Cork.
Yeah.
Daniel Carney is playing midfield, or sorry, playing wing forward, but he's actually not playing wing forward. The only time he lines out wing forward is for an Anthony Nash puck out, and with the opposition puck out. That's the only time he takes his position. And when the game is in flow, Daniel Carney's out around the middle of the field, Daniel Carney's in the half back line, he's in around the centre back position, he's picking up what we call dirty ball, he's an extra man for to lay off a hand pass and all that sort of stuff. So Cork play with only five forwards, effectively, you know, and Daniel Carney is an extra man, an extra body around the middle. So yeah, I can see your point. And then, as you said there, Colin, it allows the half-backs not to follow their men, which allows them to condense the space and come back and help out their half-backs and all that. But there's pros and cons to that as well, Colin. And Peter has often alluded to this. Basically, the long-range striking, if you have a player that's able to take a long-range score and your man isn't being marked, then that hurts you, right? But the advantage then is that you can pull back a bit and help out your full back line. And a prime example of a man who would always stay back and never follow his man would be like Patrick Maher. And he'd always stay back and help out, and he'd often get loaded off the hand pass and he drives the ball into the field up to the full forward line. So there's advantages and disadvantages, but yeah, I'm going to say 85-90% of the time the half-back line does not follow their men back into the halfway, into the half-back, because the reason for that is they feel that if a number 10 gets the ball in his midfield stroke half-back line, he's at no danger to the opposition, only that he can deliver the ball into the full forward line. And that's the reason behind it.
You agree with that, Cheddar? Yeah, like Declan Hannan's an example of that. He'll drop off and cover
the centre back simply cannot go out to midfield unless you have somebody to drop in and fill for him.
If you're so, we need forwards coming back then?
We do. Look, I was interested in what Davey said actually after last weekend, and I suppose he was just talking about where I probably see hurling going, and I do agree with Damien that it's the middle eight is going to be, you know, implementing most of this. But I think there's going to be a real fluidity between wing backs and wing forwards. So, you know, you may very, very well see Chris Crummy going up the field for Dublin, but Danny Sutcliffe may fall back and may not go back to the exact position, but he definitely will go back to screen that position. And I think over a period of time you're going to see the middle eight being really interchangeable with one another. And look, if Chris Crummy can score points as he did last Sunday from wing back, he's equally able to score points from wing forward. So you may very well see a different type of player filling some of these positions with a real interchange and a real fluidity between these players.
Yeah, one quick one before we have to leave it here, lads, is Brick Walsh. Played wing back at the weekend, isn't he? Some man. Like, I mean, that's where he probably started at centre half back. Played wing back the last day. He's made his 72nd championship appearance for Waterford, overtook Henry Shefflin. He's one behind Brendan Cummins, who holds the record. So he's going to draw with Brendan Cummins this weekend, and he's going to be out on his own on 74, the all-time leading championship appearance record holder, Cheddar, which, like, I mean, there's not much you can say about the man, only he's an inspirational type of figure.
He is, not necessarily for Waterford, but for anybody, and he's an inspirational figure as well for people that say, you know, your hurlers are finished by the age of 27, 28, 30, and that. I don't know Brick's day job. It may help in these situations, but look, he's the ultimate team player. To be able to just slot in there as a defender, having played as a defensive wing forward or as a midfielder for the last number of years, and just, you know, give it for the team here is certainly inspirational. Definitely inspirational within the team when the team's in a little bit of difficulty like this, that your leader and your, I suppose, the senior member of your squad is prepared to give up his own game for the sake of the team. What message does that tell to all the other young players in Waterford in terms of going out to play a championship match?
Yeah, Damien, he's a great bit of stuff, as they say.
Oh, yeah, great bit of stuff. The man that has kicked off the one-handed swing of the hurl and hit the ball, you know. And you can't beat experience, Colin. He has all the tricks of the trade. Even last year's championship, he was mighty to ride the ball and pull the man in and win a free. You know, he's absolutely brilliant. The man, the age that he is, he's just a credit to himself and to the way he gets himself prepared for championship hurling. He was wing back the last end. Like, he was absolutely brilliant. So he only made really one mistake, which was the slip up for the goal, which I felt sorry for him, right? But the man has just been brilliant. He's up there in Waterford with the Kieran McGraths and the Tony Browns and the John Milans. He's just an iconic figure in hurling, an iconic figure down in Waterford, and he deserves all his praises too, he gets, because he'll only get so long, and he's never won in All-Ireland. He's one of these players that's ever won, and he'd love to see him win in All-Ireland. And I asked you last year to ask him, why does he wear two pairs of shorts? I don't know, did you ever get to ask him that question?
No.
Colin, he wears two pairs of shorts under his shorts. But the man is just there's nothing short, nothing to say, only the man is a touch of class.
Yeah, exactly. Cheddar, you wanted to come back in there quickly.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. There's just one other point about Limerick and Waterford. their last, this is really championship hurling for both on Sunday, because both are very difficult last games to finish up, and they need the points, and they'll be playing against teams who may also need the points. Limerick have got to go to Clare in Ennis. That won't be easy. Clare are playing Tip obviously on Sunday. If they lose, they need points. I think they're only on 2 points at the minute. Waterford are going to have to go to Semple Stadium to play Cork. You might as well say that that's a home game for Cork. You know, Cork need the points there as well. They're on 4 at the minute, but they could very well be passed out in terms of getting into a Munster final and that. So it is real knockout hurling for the four teams on Sunday, but certainly for Limerick and for Waterford.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I did say a win for Limerick would see them into the final, but that's only if Tipperary beat Clare, so that needs to be pointed out as well. All right, up next we'll do Paddy Power predictions.
And the game takes on, can very, very often, and take on a life of its own. What's tactics? I mean, you've got to make decisions and you've got to decide what you're going to do, and at the end of the day, you hand it over to the players and the players play, you know? The game was fast, was furious, it had everything really, you know, and you don't have too much influence on what's happening. What happened last year, it goes out the window, or the year before, or whenever it was. Tipperary, don't go away. The air is there. And the game takes on, can very, very often, and take on a life of its own.
All right, Paddy Power predictions, and Cheddar's had to go, Damien, so it's just me and you. Listen, we've held the four together on our own before, so this won't be any big deal to either of the two of us, right?
Yeah, two man full four-line column.
Exactly, right. Well, we'll start with Tipperary and Clare. We haven't spoken about that at all. And, like, I mean, Tipperary, I don't know what to make of Tipperary. Like, are Tipperary just waiting to burst into life and become a force, or are they just waiting to be put out of their misery? I don't really know which side of that I'm on.
I'm the exact same as you, Colm. Only last week I said to you that Tip would come out all guns blazing against Waterford, and that they would get to a Munster final. I thought they'd win the Munster championship. And they're just a massive disappointment. I just don't know why. Like, it's unbelievable to see the two McGraths been taken off the last day. Bubbles O'Dwyer hasn't got into form at all. Pádraig Maher the last day, who was an absolutely phenomenal hurler. It was as sluggish as I've seen him now. He looked like he was carrying a hamstring, which is fair enough. They remind me that they're a team that's extremely tired as well. Like, that they're on the road and that there isn't much more left. I don't know. It's an amazing thing. I thought that the comeback against Cork would have ignited their season, but it hasn't. And, like, with referees' decisions the last day and an umpire's decisions, kept them in the championship and effectively, maybe, you know, knocked Waterford completely out of the championship. You know, and we don't know that yet. But I don't know. There's something missing with Tipperary, and it's hard to believe because there's so many top quality hurlers that I don't need to name. We all know who they are, and they're just not sparking. I don't know what's wrong.
I don't either. But, like, I mean, even you mentioned Pádraig Maher there. Geez, that mistake for Pádraig Mahoney's goal. Like, have you ever seen Pádraig Maher batting a ball back out into play? He got the assist for that. What was he thinking there? Is that just like a symbol of the malaise?
Actually, Pádraig Maher, being honest with you, he was actually at fault for the two goals, because if you watch the first goal, right, he actually went up and he cut across, so he did catch the ball and he miscaught it, and then Devine put it into the net, and then, as you said, batted. Now, the argument may be there now that maybe Hogan should have been rolling and let off wide, because it was going wide and there was going to be no problems, but I don't know, they're just not playing well. They're not playing with a constant. Brendan Maher was absolutely outstanding the last day, and in fairness, Brendan Maher had a fantastic second half as well against Cork, you know. But I just thought what happened against Cork in the second half would have absolutely ignited them, and it would have drove them. But it's an amazing thing, and I spoke to you about this as well, Colm. They don't look motivated.
No.
Like, cheap. They just, you know, there's no passion inside them. And I defended Mick Ryan, so I did, and I felt sorry for him. But, like, I see Mick Ryan on the sideline and he's roaring, shouting at the players, and he's waving his hand, telling the lads to come on like this. But at some stages, it just looks like there's nothing left in the Tipperary lads. And like on that ground, I'm going to say that Waugh or that Clare are going to beat Tipperary, and if Clare are ever going to beat them, it's going to be now. But Tipperary have everything to play for. Actually, this game, Tip versus Clare, could wind up that this could be the third team.
Yeah.
To come out, if that makes sense.
No,
this because of the head-to-head rule. So this is an absolutely massive, massive game. But Tip need to up a big time. But they just not seem to get going, you know. And as I said, Pádraig Maher had a bandage around his hamstring again, and we were after speaking about hamstrings. And I don't know. Clare are a week rested. Clare are going well. John Conlon's going very well. Tony Kelly's going well. One man I never mentioned for Clare, and I'm disappointed in myself to haven't, to mention McInerney. As David McInerney, the centre back, full back for Clare, he has become a fine player. Oh, geez, he's a great hurler. So he's also a massive leader for Clare at the moment. His father was a great hurler as well. But just to give him a mention, I never actually mentioned him on the show. Geez, he's a great bit of stuff.
Do they switch around, Cleary and McInerney, depending on who they're playing?
Yeah, he does. He has played full back and he's played centre back, but he is so versatile. The truth of it is, I've seen that guy hurl, right? That guy could play centre forward.
Right.
And absolutely, absolutely no problem. Like, he won an All-Ireland and an All-Star cornerback, and he could play a sweeper role. He could play midfield. He's a great bit of stuff. He's a fine athlete. He had problems last year with his back. So he had, you know, and this year they seem to have, you know, kind of rested him and got him into a real rehab program and all that sort of stuff. But I would have a lot of praise for that guy, you know. So he's a great bit of stuff.
Right, okay. I can see Shane O'Donnell and Conor McGrath getting joy from the Tipperary full forward line based on previous games. You can see John Conlon getting joy and Seamus Kennedy as well. Or maybe is this a game for Podge Collins to come on and have three small fellas buzzing around that full forward line? You know, Tipperary don't really like that as well.
Yeah, well, like as I said, on the ground, I don't know where Tip are at. I am going back in Clare. I think Clare are in a great position. But like, Clare have talent, and Clare won in All-Ireland was it 3 or 4 years ago. They need to be winning this game. They need to be hammering at home, you know. They have quality on their bench. And Clare still have an opportunity to get to a Munster final as well if they win their next two games. So to do so, they have lots of great players, you know. Clare, they've lots of young players, they've lively players. They mightn't have huge players across the half forward line, but geez, they're not small either. I can't think saying they're not big men, but geez, they're not small either. And they're all in great shape, you know. And I seen Tony here the other day, he was at the garage. They're all in physical, unbelievable shape. You know, and they're all doing their correct strength and conditioning programs. So Clare need to push on now. Genuinely, they need to push on and try make that breakthrough. As simple as that now.
Yeah, no, exactly. So if Clare beat Tip this weekend, they go up to 4 points. And if Waterford happen to lose to Limerick, Clare will be playing a Waterford team that are out of it in the last game to go to 6 points. Like you're saying, like if Clare win this, there's a very good chance that they could be in the Munster final. So there's a huge, it is shit or get off the pot time for Clare. And like you said, Tipperary are there for the taking potentially. Yeah. Tipperary are 8-11 on Paddy Power and Clare 13-8. So you going for Clare in this one?
I'm going to go for Clare. As you said, it's a huge game for Clare on them 2 points. One. To me, it could be the third team between Clare and Tip. That's right. And the second point is, if Clare beat Tip, they have Waterford. And if Waterford happen to get beaten by Limerick, you know, that means it's a win against Waterford would put into a Munster championship. Correct me if I'm wrong with the maths, but it would put them on 6 points.
Yeah, maybe. And then, then Cork. Yeah, yeah no, it might not. Because if Limerick would have beaten Waterford, Limerick would go to... Limerick will go to 5 points, and Limerick could potentially get into it against Cork because Cork have a better head-to-head. Look, there's a lot of different permutations, but they're in a good place.
But, yeah,
Yeah, exactly. Right, the other one we haven't spoken about is the big one in the Leinster Championship. And the Leinster Championship, in fairness, has been playing second fiddle to the Munster Championship. But this is probably...
Yeah, well, to be fair, the Munster Championship has been fantastic.
No, it has.
Let's be honest. I said it there a couple of weeks ago, that I think the Munster Championship is a more skillful championship and a lot faster hurling than the Leinster Championship.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more better teams in the Munster Championship. The Munster Championship has been brilliant. Jeez, there's been such excitement in it. So and the amount of scores in it. It's like when Cork play, it's nearly like drafts. You come at me, we come at you. You know, it's nearly like seven hurling at times. You know, and they play with a huge freedom. Your man Coleman Gibbon for Cork, in my eyes, are just unbelievable. No more than we've all spoke about Horgan and all the boys up front, but geez, them two players are just brilliant. But the Munster Championship has been absolutely top class. I was disappointed in Wexford against Galway. Really, really was. I thought, like last year's Leinster final, the main man that caused all the problems for Wexford was Conor Cooney. And straight from the start of the match, was Conor Cooney causing all the problems again. Like, you know, I know they put a different player in them and all that, but like, it just, and then you take, which Davy Fitz would have been absolutely bullying with. Pádraig Mahoney got the ball. He sold it straight through the middle, offloaded the hand pass, so he did to Johnny Glynn. Johnny Glynn then gave it back in the football stuff that we were talking about, which Wexford done the week before against Dublin.
Yeah.
And he went through and he should have scored a goal himself. And it was a great save, right? And then Whelan puts him to back. So I think it was 1-3, if it wasn't 1-4, they were down before they even got on the score sheet. And then at the start of the second half, when Wexford needed to maybe get a score or two to kick on, Galway went down and got two scores.
Yeah.
So I was disappointed in Wexford, especially being down in Wexford. I know there's a big goalscoring class, and to say that, I think Galway are brilliant at the moment. Actually, I think they're such a fine team, such a big team, very strong, muscular team, massive athletes, all that. But I was disappointed in Wexford, I won't lie.
Yeah, no, I was disappointed too. But there is a big gulf in class. Like Davy Fitz said after that game, to tell you the truth, we trained once last week for 20 minutes. So you think we're going to be fresh. We didn't seem like that today. We weren't committing in the tackles. So it's a weird one. Like, I mean, he kept them as fresh as they possibly could and only trained for 20 minutes. And, like, I mean, this is all new to all these teams. Like, for me, that is doing the right thing. A bit of 20 minutes of hurling and just keep them ticking over maybe on the Wednesday night. And that didn't work. So I think Wexford don't have excuses anymore against Galway. They're just not good enough for Galway. Like, Galway, there's nothing to be ashamed of there.
Not one bit to be ashamed of. That's a fantastic Galway team. That's a brilliant team.
Yeah.
That's as good as Galway team. I actually think this Galway team is as good as some of them Kilkenny teams in the last 10 years. And I mean that.
Jesus, jeez, don't start saying that.
Well, I know what you mean, but jeez, they are a great team.
Yeah.
Jeez, that Galway team is, like I said it to a lad actually yesterday, like your man Niall Burke can't make the team, so he can't.
Flynn.
You have... Flynn can't make the team, you know, and didn't two players make any team, you know, and them two boys were the reasons why Galway won the All-Ireland last year against Watford. They scored 5 points between them.
Yeah. Now,
you know, and they're still being used.
Go on. Having said all this about Wexford, wait and hear this. Kilkenny are 4-11 favourites for this. Wexford are 11-4. You're getting nearly 3-1 on Wexford. There's no way they're that far outside in this game. Now, they are on the road 4 weeks in a row, and Kilkenny have had the week's rest, so maybe that's what Paddy Power is reading into there.
I'm expecting a big one from Kilkenny, it's an opportunity for Kilkenny to get back into a Leinster final. Kilkenny, they're after winning the National Hurling League. Brian Cody after blowing an awful lot of new players, and he's after finding a lot of new players, and now he's after getting back a couple of these what we call his stalwarts in Murphy and Finlay, and the rumour is that maybe Richie Hogan might be playing as well the next day. So I expect a big performance now from Kilkenny. I expect Kilkenny to win, definitely when the game is in Nolan Park. I expect Brian Cody to have his team absolutely motivated and riled up to the last to get back into a Leinster final, to have a crack at Galway in Croke Park. Being honest, my own personal opinion, I hope Kilkenny win. Why? Because I think in the Leinster final it will be a better game for Kilkenny versus Galway in Croke Park.
Yeah.
I think if Galway did that to Wexford down in Wexford Park, which is a smaller, tinier pitch, and you might say how small is it, it's as small as James Scale able to puck the ball from his own goal mouth down to the opposition full forward line.
Yeah.
So my opinion is, what would Galway do to Wexford? They're a year on from last year. I think they're a bit, lot better from last year. So I think they could potentially destroy Wexford in the Leinster final. So I'm hoping that Wexford, I'm hoping that Kilkenny will win, and it will become a Kilkenny Galway Leinster final, where it will actually be a very good game.
An interesting one here, Damien, is Kilkenny I'll paint a picture here for you. So Kilkenny beat Wexford. Kilkenny go and play Galway in the Leinster final. Galway are on song. They end up giving Kilkenny a 7, 8, 9, 10 point beating. Right, that might not happen. I'm just painting this picture. So Kilkenny come out of that Leinster final and they're in to an All-Ireland quarter final, demoralised. Wexford lose to Kilkenny at the weekend. They go and play the Joe McDonagh Cup winners in a preliminary quarter final. They beat them, which they probably will. Then they're back to the very same stage as Kilkenny with a bit of momentum. Isn't that gas the way that can act? A slight glitch in
I can, I can see your point, but no way would Kilkenny ever go down that line. Absolutely not. Not under Brian Cohen, that management team. Definitely wouldn't even be spoken about. Not in Kilkenny circles. But I can see your point. I know you're saying it's interesting that basically, no matter what's happening here the next day, whoever's going to get into the Leinster final and who's going to come third. But you're saying
it's not the end of the world coming third, but
it's not the end of the world. Both teams will still end up in a quarter final. Now what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Both teams will end up back in the quarter final.
But as I've often heard Brian Cody saying, it's all about challenging yourself against the best, and he wants to play against Galway to challenge himself against the best, to see where they are at the moment. Have they improved from last year? Has his younger players improved and all that? But plus, why would you give up the opportunity to win silverware? When you're in the final, Colin, you have a 50-50 chance. No matter what people say, no matter if they say that one team is way better than the other, right? Like, who would have ever thought, is it Wicklow the Beth Leash?
Yeah.
In football.
Oh no, Wicklow beat Offaly.
And who bet Leash in the football?
Leash are still in it. Carlo beat Leash in the Joe McDonagh Cup. Leash are still in the football.
No, this is football. This is just the football. Who bet Leash or Kildare in the football?
Oh, Carlo beat Kildare, yeah.
Exactly. So no one would have predicted that. In a 50-50 game, anything can happen. And as the saying is, why would so Kilkenny will always go and try win stuff. And you have an opportunity to get into an Leinster final, which is a great day, so it is, and great, an opportunity to play in Croke Park. So, I know what you're saying with your point, but momentum, and maybe Kilkenny could get beaten by Galway and all that, but Kilkenny would still prefer to play in a Leinster final and get an opportunity maybe to win a Leinster medal than go down the opposite route.
Yeah, okay, completely agree. Just finally, Galway playing Dublin. Galway are obviously true. I looked at this table and I thought, if Galway rest players and Dublin beat them, then they'll be on 4 points, the same as the losers of the Wexford Kilkenny one. But then obviously it's head to head, so it makes absolutely no difference, because Dublin incidentally have a better scoring difference than either Kilkenny or Wexford. So if it went on scoring difference, Dublin could potentially get into that third place, because you'd imagine Galway rest people this weekend.
No. Once again, you're saying Dublin have a better scoring average, but you have to remember they have a better scoring average because they played Offaly in their last game.
Yeah.
And Offaly were extremely tired, completely depleted, all that sort of stuff. Right, and the game was in Carnell Park. Will Galway rest players? I wouldn't say they're rest players. They might use the strength of their panel, right? And will Galway take the foot off the throttle? They definitely will not, because there's players fighting for places, and the players that aren't fighting for places, they're fighting for the first five positions to come on as subs. So, like you take, for example, the likes of Jason Flynn and Niall Burke might get a game next day, right? And basically, they're putting themselves on display to show Micheál Dunne that they're still well capable of starting the game, as opposed to coming off the bench and being given 15, 20 minutes. So, there's absolutely no complacency whatsoever in this Galway setup. There's no complacency in this Galway team. They're very mature. There's a lot of leaders in it. I think Galway potentially could hammer Dublin down in Pierce Stadium. You'll see a big gulf in class in this game, and I think Galway will hammer Dublin down Pierce Stadium.
Alright, okay, and we didn't actually get a prediction on the Waterford Limerick one. That's a difficult one to call. Where are you going on that one?
Waterford versus Limerick. Waterford versus Limerick. I'll just give it to Waterford. I'm going to give it to Waterford. Just it's very tight. I'll just give it to Waterford for for the sake of it. I'd probably be wrong, but I'm going to back Waterford.
You know, I'm actually thinking the same thing. I think it's because we focus so much on Waterford in the analysis that it's in my head that Waterford are going to win it. But like, I mean, you know, Limerick are really the form team of the whole championship. Cork as well, to be fair.
Yeah, and most consistent. Well, Limerick are the most consistent, from league to championship.
Year.
Maybe we should be back in Limerick, but I said Waterford, so I'll stick with them.
Yeah, and you've got a problem with Limerick too, so maybe that's kind of in your.
No, you're saying that, but then the Limerick people know that I don't have a problem with them. You're the host, I'm making that out.
Right, listen, thanks very much to Paddy Power, and we will see you. Thanks to you, Damien, as well, and we will talk to you on Monday with a review show. Right, good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, because I won't see you later. But not a lot of talking.